Information is flowing from more sources than ever before. Cloud-enabled enterprises can collect and analyze terabytes of data by leveraging the new technology. They can rapidly analyze an entire data set, developing deeper insights than what could be gained from looking at only a portion of the data, thus enabling better decisions made much faster. Booz Allen Hamilton believes secure, scalable, and automated cloud-based solutions can help derive actionable information faster. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Good morning. Welcome to the April 12th, 2012 panel event. The cloud is a shroud, fraud in a digital age. This event is part of the Expert Voices Distinguished Speakers Series and is supported by the firm Cyber Campaign. It is my pleasure to introduce Mark Herman, Executive Vice President at Booz Allen.
Thank you. Welcome to Booz Allen and the Expert Voices panel. Today we're going to talk about the cloud as a shroud, fraud in the digital age. First, thank you for joining us. I am Mark Herman, Executive Vice President with Booz Allen. I'm a leader in the firm's analytics capability, where I direct the management and strategic application of analytics and cloud technology. Today, I anticipate a lively and informative discussion. I can tell you from our earlier calls, this group will speak, and I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say today. We're going to talk about the evolution of fraud detection and prevention in health and finance. In recent years, the explosion of available data has been matched by the evolution of data storage and processing methods, making it feasible to process terabytes literally in seconds. The commodity availability of scalable storage and processing nodes, basically on demand, has made it economically feasible to expand the scope of data evaluated in real time or in near real time, and these allows you to make timely and actionable conclusions. The risk that is that a given transaction may be fraudulent, for example, should drive an appropriate response. Fraud in the healthcare and finance markets has evolved as well. Schemes often involve networks of diverse actors and are sufficiently complex to defy even the most granular, rules-based detection methods. In the health market alone, improper payments may exceed $100 billion annually, but quite frankly, no one's even really sure. How should payers, the market, etc., deal with these issues? Today's panel will explore the opportunity to enlist big data and cloud analytics in the service of earlier, more nuanced fraud detection that reduces false positives and, of course, false negatives to reduce and prevent financial loss. Through this discussion, we'll review the current state of fraud in healthcare and in finance, deterrence, detection, prevention or recovery, and litigation and prosecution. Is there a single answer? Is cloud analytics a game changer? What strategy should be advanced? And last, as capacity and capabilities advance, their workings tend to become more obscure to us mere mortals. How can we human scale the outcomes of sophisticated methodologies? Today, I'm very happy and honored to have four distinguished panelists with me to discuss these issues. So, sitting off to my far right, we have Bill Fox, JDMA, leads the commercial healthcare group at LexisNexis Risk Solutions, and is a frequent speaker on topics related to healthcare fraud, identity management, risk, and compliance. His legal career included time as a partner at the law firm of Post Shell. He was also Deputy Chief of Economics and Cybercrime at the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office and is a Special Assistant U.S. Attorney in Philadelphia. Welcome.
Thank you.
Next, right next to me actually, is Richard Ingram, Senior Principal Healthcare Industry Consultant for SAS Institute. He has 20 plus years of direct executive level experience within both the health provider and payer communities, and brings a unique perspective of the shared business and delivery issues, along with conflicting incentive structures for the health provider, payer, and informatics industries. In addition to being frequent public speaker, Mr. Ingram has also served on two separate HHS ONC executive committees focused on analytics and fraud detections. Welcome, Rick. Next, I have Timothy Gallagher, Section Chief, Financial Crime Section, Criminal Investigative Division, serves as National Program Manager of the FBI's White Collar Crime Program with responsibility for addressing fraud, healthcare fraud, corporate securities fraud, and financial institution mortgage fraud. A busy man. Mr. Gallagher has previously served in the Kansas City Division as Supervisory Special Agent of the White Collar Crime Squad, focusing on public corruption, mortgage fraud, and civil rights, and in the Financial Crime Section, where he specialized in combating identity theft and mortgage fraud. Welcome, Tim. And last, but certainly not least, we have Bill Mahan, president of the Mahan Consulting Group, is widely recognized as one of the United States' leading authorities on healthcare fraud and in his consulting practice, he specializes in healthcare fraud management and prevention strategies and services for private and public insurance payers, law enforcement agencies, the healthcare professions, and health industry organizations. Ms. Mahan established an independent consulting practice in July 2004 following a 13-year tenure as executive director and later president, CEO of the National Healthcare Anti-Fraud Association, the NHCAA. So again, welcome.
Thank you.
So now, let me open this up here. Tim, if I could, I see your current responsibilities include reference to fraud in healthcare. Does the Bureau approach data requirements for healthcare investigations differently from those for other financial crimes?
Thanks, Mark. Actually, I'll give you a quick background here. The FBI operates in a threat-driven environment. That being said, we have to know what our threats are in our AOR, our area of responsibility, and what the vulnerabilities are within the domain. To do this, we need numerous data streams coming into our analysts and our agents. Some are common across program lines. As you mentioned, I have financial crimes, I have healthcare fraud, the common data streams are going to be, you know, your financial data, i.e. banking data. That's going to be the same across those lines, whether it be for corporate fraud, financial institution fraud, or for healthcare fraud. The difference is going to be in healthcare fraud, we have data coming to us from, you know, private industry, i.e. some of the folks here at the table in your current positions or in your former lives, as well as government entities. This data is highly reliable. You know, if you look at this as opposed to some of the other violations that we enforce, where we're actually getting data streams that are coming to us straight from the general public, or from individuals who are not trained in how to enter this or trained into actually what we need to solve our crimes or to know what our crime problem is even. So I would say that it's highly reliable. And we utilize it both to target criminal activity as well as for getting a heat map, knowing what our threats are, and putting our resources against it.
Excellent. Bill Fox, obviously data is a key variable in all this. I would like to hear your thoughts on the explosion in data, the variety, the availability of that data. It seems that data quantity, whether it's public, private, structured, or unstructured, is now available to include in any fraud analysis. Is there contextual value in those additional data sources that help focus us? And basically, will cloud analytics be a critical component of that success?
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's an interesting subject because we've been a big data company for a very long time and been dealing with how do you take big data, and that's something that probably we could define. And generally, the definition that I've been using is it's whatever level of data is too big for you to deal with in your current environment. So what people are trying to do is figure out, now that I can theoretically get all this data, there's even companies, I read an article in the New York Times that are talking about collecting every fact in the world. Well, every fact in the world, as Tim will tell you, is not relevant to every case in the world, is not relevant to every analysis that you want to do. So the big thing is figuring out how to take all this data and turn it into actionable intelligence. And that's where the cloud analytics and the ability to do these advanced analytics are important. And I think the most important piece of it, in terms of the data itself, it's exactly what you said around contextual value. When you're doing fraud work, is take something that might look funny or violates a rule and figure out if there's intent, figure out if it's actually a fraudulent issue. And by giving context around that, by leveraging other facts around that transaction, financial data, personal data about the person, and understanding the context, you can get much farther down the line to understanding what's really going on. I think the cloud analytics will really be important in spreading the ability of more players to do these kind of advanced analytics. A smaller organization, even a medium-sized organization, isn't going to build their own supercomputing platform, isn't going to make that kind of investment. But by being able to go into a cloud environment, get a few nodes, and do that kind of analytics, it really broadens out the possibilities for experimenting with this big data, understanding what works and what doesn't, and doing a better job.
I'll come back to some point there. Rick, actually, I should be in full disclosure. I am personally a user of your product, so I want to say I'm very impressed. There is a short list of enterprise-class robust analysis tools utilized by large organizations in finance, healthcare, and healthcare administration. What are the characteristics do you see as the critical components of robust analytics in the industry today? How can these define a platform for fraud analysis, and what, in your view, are the critical components of high-performance computing?
Well, it's an exciting time because when the word analytics is used, it can mean everything from historical reporting to really true optimization and forecasting and looking into the future. I would say from any kind of platform that's going to try to address fraud, waste, or abuse, there ought to be three significant components. There ought to be the traditional rules-based caveat of taking known fraud schemes and building it into your initial search on a transaction. Then when you get into the more unknown areas, the whole ability to do anomaly detection is critical. But the anomaly detection should not just be financial detection. It should be focused around care protocols, the order of care based upon diagnosis codes. It's not just a financial anomaly, but broaden that strength. When we get into the complex analytics, we're talking about the high-end predictive modeling. The thing I'm particularly excited about is a new discipline around social network analysis. And most people hear the term social network analysis and they think Facebook or LinkedIn. Social network analysis is the ability to do associative linking. So take the ecosystem of healthcare. Look at the players in the provider community, as well as the employers, as well as the members and patients, and identify how do they normally relate, which physician traditionally refers what services to outpatient services, for example, and take that and begin to uncover the anomalies of those associations. From a platform standpoint, we've already mentioned about velocity and variety and volume of data. Cloud technology really helped bringing all that together. But the real thing we need to be careful about is you can't have information overload. And so the most critical thing is to be able, really to be able to drill into what is relevant to the problem you're exploring. So timely insights, accurate data, optimizing those resources ultimately lead into high impact outcomes through high performance computing.
I would like to pick up a thread here, and I would turn it over to the panelists to sort of just respond to. As an analyst, I've learned, you know, without boring the audience, but there's multiple techniques that each have strengths and weaknesses mathematically or statistically in how you do things. And I think that there's this interesting issue around contextuality, in other words, the context. And you were talking about the different data streams, I think, in your case. And so I'd like to just hear some of the thoughts, and you talk about social networking, some of the thoughts of the panels around how does context give us a lever against fraud? And I'd just like to hear some of those thoughts. Start down there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way we look at it is if you start to
to
think about social network analytics as Rick discussed, so you can do those kind of analytics on your own data. You can look at referral patterns, for instance, and see how they differ among physicians. You can look at the data in your financial data. But to bring context to that is to also see how those physicians or how those providers are related as people in the world. So if someone gets kicked out of the Medicaid system in Florida, they might move up to New York and have their sister-in-law open the same kind of clinic that they were running down in Florida. So if you can see that connection of those people in the world, you have a whole different way of looking at fraud. So that you're going to understand that when they enroll into the program, so this person has a risk attached to them, whether or not that doesn't allow them to enroll, or it allows you to understand that risk and monitor it over time, put that on prepay prevention or something. So when we talk about context, it's understanding the facts and relationships between people, assets, providers, members in the world that adds a layer of context to understanding what that relationship actually is, and is it fraud, is it something else?
Issue.
The first thing I think of is fraud prevention. I'm all for putting people in prison. I love locking people up. I got my gun in my handcuffs still. You know, I like to lock people up. But anytime I have an opportunity to get up in front of people and tell them, here's what the schemes are, here's what we're seeing, here's what you need to do, so that the money doesn't go out the front door, and we have to come back and try and put a case together later. You know that if we can prevent it in the first instance, I'm all for it. And these analytics that we're speaking about here, they can put people in suspension status, so it's not a chase and pay system, and we're not chasing billion-dollar cases where we're thinking, what, how did this get to be so big? They're able to identify it at the earliest possible level, and then take appropriate action, whether that be referring it to us or whether that be stop paying at that point. It's a tool. It's an indicator. I realize that we can't put a program together that's going to go through this whole checklist and say, this is a federal crime. You know, as Bill said, we need to establish intent. We need to establish, take a step back. You know, sometimes even on its face, the data, you'd look at it and say, wow, this physician was billing 26 hours a day. Boom, I got him. Let's go out and lock him up. But then you start to like put some context to it and realize, wait a minute, this guy has five people working for him. They're allowed to bill out under his number. Okay, let's put that off to the side there. I'm not saying that that's not a crime, but it's something that needs to be looked at. But it's just it's an indicator, and us in law enforcement will use it as such.
Rick, what I would like to ask you is, you brought up this whole point of contextual data. The thing that occurs to me, having personally, by the way, dealt with one credit card fraud incident this week and five phishing attacks, I'm certainly aware personally about what's going on in the world. But I'd ask you, how could we use the context? It goes back to the point that was just made, that it's easier to not pay out and try to catch the money after you paid it out as to sort of say, ask for more data. How do you use the social networking ability to sort of put a delay in the system so that somebody has to bring more data to the table, which usually if they're a crook, they're going to kind of go away at that point, one would presume. At least you don't pay the money out. So any thoughts around that?
Yeah, your question is specific to social network analysis. I think the key thing about social network analysis is you cannot look at it as a stagnant map. It's not a map of how the five of us interrelate. It's a map of how the five of us interrelate and how is that changing on an hourly basis, a daily basis. So spikes become very contextual. I mean, you recognize that, we don't normally see the number of referrals spike from one provider to another facility. The other piece about contextual data that we have to be able to be very careful about is provider information. You need to be able to bring in the specialty. So a provider with an identifier is one thing, but a provider knowing they are a home health delivery outfit really kind of changes the contextual in terms of quantities of visits, quantities of billings for supplies that are being left on site, where a supply amount wouldn't be quite nearly as significant if it were an ambulatory surgical center.
Right. Turning to you, Bill Mahan, I'd like to sort of, if I could, given your background in healthcare fraud, taking what we just talked about, and if you think about the rules on HIPAA, the HIPAA, very detailed HIPAA rules, where is the balance point of anonymity for the patient and getting this kind of data so you can actually deal with this? I mean, is there a tension there?
No, I think in most cases, Mark, the fraud case itself is going to be investigated and, if applicable, made against the healthcare provider as opposed to the patient. In some cases, cosmetic surgery schemes, for example, some of the weight loss schemes that predominate today, you do see patient collusion and involvement where that becomes a concern from the investigative standpoint. But for the most part, Nancy Ann DeParle, when she was the old HICFA administrator years ago, I think said it best. She said, providers don't have an expectation of privacy in the Medicare system. The patients have every expectation of privacy, but if you're a provider billing the system and making money off the program, you have to expect to be fairly scrutinized. When we talk about the context, I think it's very interesting. We've all sort of talked about the art of the possible from a technological standpoint, but we also have to look at the industry's preparedness to embrace new technologies and to make the most of them. And those issues involve everything from the quality and compatibility of large data sets within big enterprises to the investigative functions access to that range of data. The worst case scenario is you take all the context that Bill Fox described, but the file goes to a physician medical reviewer within the company who doesn't want to know anything except the record and the claim that's in front of them.
That's right.
So context goes out the window, and the result is that someone makes a decision that, yep, these people are pretty good at faking it if that's what it is. But
I will tell you, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs once said at a luncheon that I was at, he said that culture eats strategy for breakfast every morning. So I think that sounded like an example of what you were talking about there. To follow this thread down a little bit of a different path, I'd like to move on to sort of a change in topic. I want to talk a little bit now about deterrence, detection, prevention, or recovery in litigation. So basically, detection, prevention versus recovery in litigation strategies. Is there a single answer? Is cloud analytics a game, potentially a game changer? And what would those strategies look like? And I think, as you just said, we might want to think about those strategies and how they affect or are impacted by culture. So, Bill Fox, starting with you, the finance industry has long used forms of risk assessment, credit card scoring, and other tools to qualify individual applicants for credit, which is how my particular credit card thing got caught before they actually got the money. This approach is intended in part to deter fraud. What's your view on the application of cloud-based analytics and diverse data to the healthcare enrollment process for members, providers, and others? Can these assets be leveraged to assess healthcare transaction risk in real time?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. We obviously do a lot of that work on the finance and banking side, and we've certainly taken the lessons that we've learned there into healthcare, but healthcare is a fundamentally different situation. You know, one of the things I, as an example, I always use is, you know, all the money at the bank's behind the counter. And they can do that because you don't need to rush into the bank and get all your money in 5 seconds. So they can have the money back there, and you're out there, and they ask you for your card. Well, but you might need to run into the emergency room and get treated right away. So there's a difference between the delivery of healthcare and finance, and that's what we look at a lot. But that said, everything that we're doing is basically trying to make the risk assessment at what you're talking about, at the level of enrollment of a provider, at when the person comes in for treatment, more sophisticated. So if you take more data, you understand how to score it. So for instance, you might have a clinical risk score on a provider that you're looking at. But do you need to know, is it a driver of fraud if a provider's had 2 bankruptcies in the last couple of years? If a provider is within a couple degrees of association to a known fraudster? So being able to blend that kind of information into a score and understand it in enrollment gives you a much better picture of the risk that's actually present in your network as you enroll those people. One of the things that something like cloud analytics involves, to Rick's point about, you know, what kind of doctor are we talking about, because that's very important in determining how is his practice against his peers. One of the things that we look at is, well, there's a reported specialty, but is his billing match up with his reported specialty? So we generally will also do what's his billed taxonomy? Who are his peers in terms of his billing? It might say he's a primary care physician, but is he really doing something else? So the ability to do those kind of sophisticated analytics to look at hundreds of thousands of providers across a population, compare them to each other, understand what patterns should look like, I think is something that cloud analytics will expand to a much greater ability.
Bill, if I can add to that, I think that's a key point. I've seen cases myself where the plan's taxonomy for Dr. Jones is family practitioner or internist. But if you can incorporate in that set of cloud analytics a website check, pretty soon, within 2 or 3 clicks, you find that Dr. Jones has the splashiest cosmetic surgery site in Southern California. So I think the ability to look very broadly at every available bit of data on Dr. Jones, you know, within reason, gives you that better leg up.
Is that being done all by computers, or are you going to have humans doing that?
Right now, it's humans who are doing it, you know, based on instinct or other clues. But if there's a will, there's a way to incorporate that sort of view in technology.
Yeah, so when I look at that particular kind of problem, I think about scalability, right? You know, most of these situations are you only have so many analysts, you know, human analysts to look at a problem, and obviously the volume is going to always be ahead of you. So, Rick, when I think about prevention, does this nexus of diverse data, advanced analytics, and cloud performance trigger some kind of tipping point for prevention? What are the approaches that you would consider that are more sort of automated versus, you know, the human intervention always?
I cringe when I hear things like tipping point to prevention, okay, because it's almost like it's the golden nugget, it's the magic answer, and as anybody that's in, particularly in Tim's profession, understands that this is a constant game being played. I think the convergence of high-end analytics, increasing more and more data from different data sources based upon the problem, making high-end analytics easier to execute with fewer staff through cloud technology, I think that certainly will contribute to prevention of healthcare fraud. But I think what has to really take place, like in other industries, is the entire ecosystem of the players in healthcare need to be brought into this problem. Heretofore, we've always said it's about the payer versus the perpetrator, okay? And I won't say the doc, we'll say the perpetrator. But in fact, the whole way in which physicians, hospitals, patients, employers are brought into the problem of healthcare fraud detection, I think will be the next stepping stone toward advancement. Some of the things that the banking industry does in terms of engaging people to be aware of credit card fraud, we are woefully behind the scenes in terms of how to engage the patients or members, how to engage all the physician community in the problem of healthcare fraud detection and prevention. There are technologies today that we're directly involved in around customer interaction or physician interaction. How do we create campaigns so that we engage these people to be our front line of defense to look for information? How do we change the behavior of when you're being covered by an employer benefit plan and you're not really sensitive to the cost? How do we get the patient to be a lot more aware of what's actually being billed? Finally, I would also say that social media is a powerful thing, but I'd like to consider reverse social media, if you would. I think it's great, Bill, that National Healthcare Anti-Fraud Association sends me weekly newsletters about the things that we've caught. But that's going to a community that's already involved in that. Imagine flooding the social networks, social media outlets, around those kinds of achievements so we make all the patients as well as the perpetrators aware of what's taking place.
That's interesting. Bill Mahan, let me just sort of go back to you on this particular topic of a process. You know, for years, some healthcare payers have routed selected claims for pre-adjudication review based on analytics performed asynchronously to the online process. So obviously, things going on outside of the process. However, an article last week in Health IT News stated that under current technologies, $18 billion in 2010 Medicare claims could have been denied prior to payment without the need for detailed medical records. Similarly, an additional $17 billion could have been retroactively recovered. So basically, can cloud analytics facilitate this a little bit better than what we're getting right now? Because obviously, if the technology is available even to do that, we're not doing it. So what's stopping that from happening?
It goes back to culture, as you mentioned. And a lot of people would find it hard to believe, but when you work in the private payer industry, for example, you realize that within almost every health insurance plan, there is a bias to pay the claims. There's a great deal of pressure on claim processing to be productive, to get claims out the door. No one likes to see the anti-fraud people coming because the one thing they're not there to do is speed anything up. And that becomes a concern. There's also the concern that
if a given claim is denied, it's not like a denied credit card transaction where nobody walks away with the goods. The patient still was treated, and there's a concern that there may be a bad financial consequence on the patient. Are they going to come after our patient with thousands of dollars in bills from this fraudulent provider? So that doesn't begin to touch the data issues themselves and the ability of the companies or the plans to incorporate the latest technology.
Well, I'll tell you, Tim, from what I just heard, it doesn't sound like you're going to be out of business anytime soon, but you know, how do you pick up all of this on the prevention side?
You know, as Rick alluded to, none of us here have unlimited resources. We have to work smarter, and you know, analytics such as cloud analytics is something that will give us an opportunity to do that. We refer to indicators and scoring them that, you know, they've been doing in the financial industry for years. You know, we do that in the FBI as well to identify what our vulnerabilities are and what our best opportunity is to put resources against it and to make a meaningful impact. We do it in healthcare fraud. We do it in mortgage fraud. We do it in insider trading cases. All the data streams that we talked about here at the table, we pull them in to identify the highest impact cases so that we can go forward with them.
Excellent. So let me follow this next thread down. It's really, you know, how do we human scale the outcomes to be actionable is really sort of the basic topic here, especially as capacity and capability advance in these particular areas. So Bill Mahan, you've done a lot of work in fraud investigation and prevention training. When the user's response to a methodology or to a tool is something like, it's too complicated, what approaches or changes are indicated?
I think the first thing, that's the cardinal rule when a potential user says that, is your response cannot be, no, it isn't. You have to understand things from the...
You have to understand things from the user's point of view. So if you have an argument with your client over whether it is or isn't too complicated, there's a problem to begin with. One key answer is training, of course. The other is to I think, try to let people focus on using the results of the technology as opposed to having to get under the hood and become mechanics of that technology. Some companies over the years have addressed that by becoming sort of software as a service models where, you know, they will take the data, they'll do the analytics and give you back the results. You decide whether they're actionable. But I think user-friendliness and compatibility with existing systems and processes is going to be the key.
You know, when I used to work for the late Vice Admiral Sobrowski, he often talked about that a large system works best when you can push the complexity into the system so that it's less complex. You know, if you try to centralize complexity, you tend to get a poor result overall. And pushing complexity into the system, in fact, enhanced performance and all that. So I would sort of, you know, ask Bill Fox and then Tim to sort of pick that up and either sort of agree or disagree, but how can you tie the risk score to the underlying components that represents the risk in a way that either prevents automated prevention or directs the investigator's next steps, but also talk about it from a where should that complexity lie in the system?
Right, I mean, and it's an interesting topic because I sort of used to do on a smaller scale what Tim does now, and I think about that a lot, and we were certainly resource-strapped, but I do come from that prosecutorial how do I make this into a case sort of background, and how we can use this risk scoring and being able to sort of get a more granular view of risk. First of all, so what were the steps that an investigator would go through? So he gets a case, and he's going to start looking into the background of the people. What's in their background? Do they have bankruptcies or criminal convictions or ties to frauds? Well, that's something that can be, in essence, automated, that could be delivered along with the case. Then he's going to look for, you know, spread that net out a little more. Are they related to people that have been involved in this kind of crime? Have I ever seen anything like this before? Have I seen something in this geographic area that looks similar to this? So that's another thing that can be automated by looking into a massive public data set like we have and say, yes, these people are related to these people. An interesting thing that I heard at the HHS DOJ summit last week was, you know, for 15 years they struggled to figure out how do you make a three-dimensional model of the HIV virus, and the best minds in analytics did it. Somebody made a computer game and put it online, a protein folding computer game, and in 10 days the problem was solved by non-scientists. So the ability to test out algorithms, to take a data set in sort of a lab capability, to test out algorithms, to look at relationships. So in essence, to use all these capabilities, the data, the cloud analytics supercomputing platform capabilities, to deliver to the investigator an investigation that's much farther down the line, that has context, that has background, then Tim can use his limited resources to go after stuff with a higher ROI, to be more sure, to not have to spend so much expensive human time tracking that down.
Yeah, Tim, I sort of get your perspective from the law enforcement side is, obviously, if something is prevented, I guess it's not a crime. I mean, it may have been a crime, but do you get involved at that point, or do you have to get involved if something has actually gone across the line, as they say?
Thanks, Mark. We talked about that when we were going around the table the other day about preventing fraud. Yeah, if there's an attempt made, yeah, sure, we could still prosecute that. Will we do that? Sometimes we will. But if you have, multi-million dollar cases, that there actually is a hard dollar loss, those are going to be the ones you're most apt to go after first. However, there are attempts made, and, a lot of times the FBI will get involved and we'll use, like you talked about, these indicators. The best evidence that you're going to get, is the individual testifying against themselves. That being said, undercover operations, using Title III court order, Title III intercepts, as a supervisor in the field and as a program manager, that's what I want to see, where you're using the indicators to show the pattern of criminal behavior and then getting involved, in putting together an operation where we're actually identifying the whole ring. In those cases, sometimes there may not be a loss because we're working with the insurers so that, you know, there is no payout. We work with our folks in the private industry, working with our other government agencies, and then putting together the conspiracy case without an actual loss. And that's a very efficient way to operate in a federal law enforcement environment.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Rick, so coming back to you on the analytics side, can high-end analytics become easily interpretable for the general population and clearly actionable for business users? Can you give me some examples of how this has worked?
Well, let's put it this way. When I joined SAS, I was convinced I could never figure out all the results of high-end analytics. But then I learned very quickly that, as Bill pointed out, there's the whole cultural change piece. When you think about high-end analytics, I think the critical piece to doing to really leveraging that to prevent fraud and detect anomalies is not so much the complexity of the model, but how can you surface the results using data visualization where things, for lack of a better word, pop out at you, hit you in the face. Heat maps can do that. Spikes in social network analysis can do that. And so those are great examples of taking social network analysis and literally hit the play button and watch those relationships change. So it's you'd have to be absolutely colorblind or not paying attention to changes to not be able to pick up on that. The one thing that I think we need to kind of drop back from a standpoint is the real risk of analytics isn't so much that it's misinterpreted. I think the culture has to also recognize that how does it best perform? The work that we've done in the private insurance space as well as ONC, CMS, and the IRS recently has found that there has to be the linchpin between the medical economics, the clinical informaticists, working with the special investigative unit to be able to understand how to do that. And there has to be a loop feed so that if a model is built and it begins to surface up data for a case to be built, as the investigation recognizes nuances that are not salient to the case, that we can build that right back into the model. Kind of as a circle back to that, I think the other piece about building this case has to be, as I talked earlier about engaging the member, engaging the employer. There's a lot of work still to be done also on abuse. And abuse can be driven, you can change behavior with abuse with things like the classic customer engagement, customer intelligence solutions of analytics. So a combination of that makes, you know, risk scores better, makes the ability to react to analytics better. It's not one piece though. And every organization's cultural readiness to high-end analytics is drastically different.
You know, when I hear you talking, Rick, I'm going to turn this back over to you for a moment. If you think about it, right, there's three basic kind of situations. Either the provider is committing fraud and the patient is not winning, like, you know, putting extra charges or whatever onto a bill or whatever it might be. The other side might be that the fraud is being perpetrated by the person who's the patient and the provider is not really aware. And then, of course, there's the case where both are involved. I mean, how do you see those kind of situations? Does that change how you think about it, or is it all the same thing in some ways?
I'm sorry.
I'll pass it around the panel, but I just kind of want to get some thoughts around that. Yeah, I'll come back to you if you're ready.
Mark, one of the classic example of where that can come into play very beneficially is in the ability to compare medical claim data and prescription data for the given patient. That sounds like it should be easy to do, but again, even in some very large enterprises, it's much more easily said than done. And because the prescription data resides within the pharmacy benefit manager's operation, the medical claim data is within the payer organization or the contractor, and the two never meet without great difficulty. So that's also pretty much the only point of sale transaction that you have in the system is the prescription transaction that's processed in a matter of seconds at CVS or Walgreens. So I look at that as one of the great areas where the cloud can have tremendous beneficial effects on the system.
Bill Fox, any thoughts on this particular point?
I think that one of the big issues here is understanding how the nature of healthcare fraud is changing. I think we traditionally looked at the individual
provider that unbundled or upcoded, or you know, maybe the patient came in from a car accident and wasn't really hurt. What we're moving toward is you know, this is becoming very attractive for organized crime, and I've been talking about that a lot. So I think as we start to recognize that,
the changing nature of how fraud is being perpetrated, that's one of the big issues with cloud computing and with health information exchange. You know, we're going to take all this PHI and put it in one place, and it's going to be really, really tempting, really, really an attractive target. So understanding how we can utilize that data, but also protect it and look at healthcare fraud fundamentally differently is not just, I'm looking at this one provider's claim foe to find out what he's doing with his billing, but what's going on in my organization? What's the network that's at work here? And starting to look at it that way, because I think the people at DOJ and FBI are saying, you know, this is the single biggest trend.
Rick, you know, one of the things I just heard was that it was around the point that was made by Bill Mahan around prescription transactions being the place where lots of data comes together. Is that really sort of the kernel here about integration of data is where you can start to get the leverage, or is it?
Well, certainly integration is an issue. I think Bill's point of, you know, the richness of the data. The prescription data is a key indicator. It's the trouble is comparing it to claims and determining being able to catch it early enough. There's also the risk of lab data, you know, getting a bill for lab work that was never prescribed. You don't catch the prescriptions. There is, you know, as Bill Fox indicated, if we can ultimately tap into health information exchanges, the trouble with those is they tend to be closed networks. So it's not just one national or even regional health information exchange, it's multiple. You then have the ability to link the doctor order at the time of care, the actual bill for the prescription, then you've actually moved to that next step of truly leveraging all the information. You'll still have issues around data redundancy, and you know, it could be Walgreens XYZ or Walgreens on 7th Street or 7th Avenue that you'll have to clean up. But there's, if you can pull that together, the point of care, the prescription, the actual delivery of the prescription or the delivery of a lab test, and then the ultimate claim, then you've got much better breadth of depth of data to be able to detect and prevent fraud.
You know, one thing I just heard you say, which I think is a point that of some importance, is that some of these networks, there's no forcing function to make some of this stuff come together, if you think about it, right? I mean, there's, you know, putting networks together costs money. A lot of hospitals work on very, very thin margins. So, you know, and so forth, from what I can hear, electronic health records is not saving anybody any money as they try to go through some of this. I'd like to just hear maybe some of your thoughts. You know, are there any things on the horizon in sort of the public regulatory that might help to create some of this?
Sure. As you were going through that question before, you said unwitting patient beneficiary. I'm looking at myself. Okay, yeah, I worked that 20 years ago. You know, we don't do that type of stuff anymore. You know, we're looking for the bigger conspiracy that you spoke about, conspiracy, collusion, organized crime. You know, the organized criminals are using this information not only for healthcare fraud, but you know, for mortgage fraud as well, or maybe to execute insider trades. They're using the information across many industries, many programs. You know, we need to be doing the same as well if we're going to combat it. We're working with HHS and private industry to try and, you know, develop a more robust data sharing. Obviously, there are numerous privacy concerns, and there are a lot of lawyers involved. I'm an accountant, so I can say that. But you have to respect, you know, the HIPAA law, we need to make this work in a way that we'll be able to share the data to stay one step ahead of the trend.
Great. So let me sort of start to move us towards the close of this particular part of the session. I will note for our people in the back that the timer has stopped at least three times, so I have a guess at what time it is relative to the 50 minutes, but I'll do the best I can. I'd like to go down the panel, just starting from my far left and moving across. You know, from your perspective, what could be the biggest game changer for the fight against fraud? And so we'll just sort of give your kind of closing thoughts on that.
Sure. I think the biggest game-changing potential right now lies in the public sector, because if you're going to use the big data capacity and cloud technology to the utmost, then in theory you should be dumping every single health insurance claim in the country, private and public, into one cloud where it can be analyzed along with all the other data. In the private sector, right now you're looking at a landscape where you would be taking each and every silo that each private payer represents and simply moving each of those silos into a new cloud where it remains siloed. Under the Affordable Care Act, the government agencies are under a requirement to create an integrated data repository. So you've got the philosophic and the legislative regulatory foundation for looking at all manner of data across Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, other niche federal and state programs. And I see that as sort of the proving ground for making the most of the cloud in this field.
Rick?
Game changer is such a powerful word. I'll say culture changer. I like what's in the Affordable Care Act from the standpoint of the emphasis on fraud detection and prevention and identification and building the warehouse. The public sector does have that advantage between the VA and CMS to be able to pull that together. From the private sector, I think short of regulation, short of statutory changes, I think the biggest game changer will be using cloud technology. The Blue Cross Blue Shield Association was working on trying to develop a Blue Health Initiative where the Blues plans merged all their data together so they could do more robust fraud detection. You know, at the end of the day, everybody that is hit by fraud understands that we could be the next guy or, you know, any plan is susceptible. I think a concentrated cloud platform that integrates the data from multiple payers, goes to the data cleansing to clean up the redundancies with a SWAT team of analytic professionals to apply analytics on that to uncover what is relevantly significant to then turn over to the investigators is a game changer, but it's more culture. I think if we latch onto one technology only, we'll be missing the boat because the fraudsters are three steps ahead of us.
Absolutely. Tim?
I'll echo my previous comments. You talk about, you know, as you said, game changer. You know, as the saying was, it passed its prologue. I think that collaboration in the past has been our greatest tool, and I think going forward, it will continue to be our greatest tool, whether it's, you know, sharing of information, sharing of trends, or, you know, sharing of databases across the cloud to put together effective prevention strategies, whether it's, you know, stop payments or investigative strategies.
Bill?
So since I got to go last, I could just say, well, what they said. I think what's going to be really important, so you know, I come from Tim's world and have been in this world for a long time, and I talk to a lot of people in the industry that are in charge of doing this for their private plans and making sure this doesn't happen. And I think what is really going to be the, if you want to call it a tipping point, is to be able to put this technology, put these capabilities, put the actionable intelligence that we can get by leveraging the data and the cloud into the hands of the people in a way that really does make it clear to them that this is a good thing. I think that there's a lot of fear around it. I think that those of us that do this kind of work understand that what Tim does is never going away. And there's so much of it that if we can make it 90% easier to do, it's still not going away. So I think the real thing to be thinking about in the long term is how do you take all these capabilities and all this data, put it in the hands of the person who actually has to execute on it in a way where they say, yeah, this is great. I can actually get so much more done, do more for my organization, whether it's, you know, bringing back money into the trust fund, bringing back money into the company, because like you said, hospital runs very thin. Most private insurance companies run very thin as well with MLR, medical loss ratios. So I think that that's what we're really thinking about and what's really important is being able to take this data, take these sort of abstract computing capabilities and make the people on the ground put it in their hands in a way that they can really use.
Excellent. I'll tell you, just to try to sum up a little bit of what I heard is that one, that Rick, you drop security is good for you. So well done. I think that integration offers a lot of value, but as I heard culture may be a bigger impediment to integration than anything else. And I would also offer, having had a conversation just yesterday at the VA, some of the ability to use VA and CMS data, HIPAA laws are going to have to be reinterpreted relative to those, the public good. You know, you might have to give up some amount of hiding the identity of people just to get better access to certain fields of data, just so you can do the analysis and actually hopefully save lives. So let me just sort of now start to close this out. First, I want to thank everybody, our distinguished panelists, for the cloud as a shroud, fraud in the digital age, which is today's Expert Voices panels are Bill Fox, JDMA. He leads the commercial healthcare group at LexisNexis Risk Solutions, so thank you. Timothy Gallagher, Section Chief, Financial Crime Section, Criminal Investigative Division at the FBI. Thank you. Richard Ingram, Senior Principal Healthcare Industry Consultant at the SAS Institute. And William J. Mahan, President of the Mahan Consulting Group, LLC. Thank you. This has been Expert Voices Panel, as brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton and Federal News Radio. I encourage you to listen to this panel on demand, watch video from the panel, and read expert commentary on this topic at www.boozallen.com/expertvoices. My name is Mark Herman, Executive Vice President at Booz Allen Hamilton, and thank you for listening.
Information is flowing from more sources than ever before. Cloud-enabled enterprises can collect and analyze terabytes of data by leveraging the new technology. They can rapidly analyze an entire data set, developing deeper insights than what could be gained from looking at only a portion of the data, thus enabling better decisions made much faster. Booz Allen Hamilton believes secure, scalable, and automated cloud-based solutions can help derive actionable information faster. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Join IHEPA and NFL greats Brian Mitchell, Roy Jefferson, Brig Owens, and the voice of the Redskins, Larry Michael, for the IHEPA Metro Golf Classic, benefiting Fisher House on May 23rd at Westfields Golf Club in Clifton, Virginia. The incredible Dennis Walters Golf Show is also featured as part of this charity event. Register at ahepagolf.com. That's ahepagolf.com. And join IHEPA in support of a wonderful cause, the Fisher House.